Our next guest, always a pleasure to have him on, and he's always gracious with his time to come on every Friday about this time. State Senator Chris Elliott joins us online. Senator, how are you this morning?
Doing great. Happy Friday. It's a beautiful day here in South Alabama.
Yeah, well, we get a bunch of those down this way. Something been kind of kicking around here, and the discussion started. We had your colleague, Dr. Stutz, on earlier this week, and he's very optimistic that the vaccine is going to be in place, it's going to be ready, and you'll get the boost from it that you need after you take it in time for when the regular session is slated to begin on February the 2nd. Are you as optimistic, first of all, but secondly, do you think that you and your colleagues in the House and the Senate ought to, you know, maybe get, not first in line, but then certainly not with everyone else, just so you could get some of this work done?
Well, two questions there. And first, let me say one of my favorite things about the Alabama legislature, a citizen legislature like that, is that you have, you know, regular folks that have regular jobs with real world experience. And Dr. Stutz is a practicing physician, is one of those guys, you know, that is able to use what he knows in his real job, if you will, to help shape policy and be kind of an expert in his field in the legislature. So I have a tremendous amount of respect for Dr. Stutz and what he's saying. And I tend to agree with him that, I had the opportunity to listen to your show the other day when you had Dr. Stutz on, but I tend to agree with him that the members of the legislature, you know, are likely to have had COVID by the time we come back in a month and a half, or are eligible to receive the vaccine in one of the first one or two phases because of their age or other underlying health conditions. I mean, look, I'm the second youngest person in the Senate. Andrew Jones is the only one that's younger than I am, and I'm not a young guy anymore. So most of the folks that are serving in the legislature are in a more advanced age, if you will, than I am, and are likely to have the opportunity to get this vaccine pretty soon, I think.
Yeah, and I, you know, will that be enough for you guys to be able to safely, maybe not, it won't be normal circumstances or regular order as we are used to, but will it be enough for you guys to be able to meet?
I think so. I really do. Now, you know, I wasn't dodging your other question about whether or not, you know, the members of the legislature should somehow or another get access to the vaccine earlier so that we can meet and get government back going again. And I think the answer to that is probably not. I mean, I think that, you know, individual members of the legislature ought to be treated just as everybody else would be. I do think, again, though, that because of the advanced age of a number of our members, that they're going to be up for that and in line for that earlier than the majority of the population, just like our, you know, our grandparents are. And I hope that they go ahead and take advantage of that. So that we can get back to work. I'll be taking the vaccine when it's available for my group and age group, and I hope that it keeps the COVID away. I've been fortunate to not have contracted it so far that I know of. So hopefully we can all get back to work. And I think we will. I think these notions of, you know, coming in February and only doing budgets and going back home again, I don't think that's going to happen. I think that we're going back in, we're going to do the people's work, and we need to take some steps to regain some of the authority of the legislature.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, and we talked about this last week on the heels of Governor Ivey's decision that she was going to use her emergency authority to do some things that typically the legislature would do. My friend Josh Moon has a podcast, and hit Chris England on, Democrat, I would say a high-profile Democrat in the ranks of Alabama politics. He is chairman of the Democratic Party, but he's even saying that, you know, maybe there's an overreach here by the executive branch, and that's not something that's typical of small government or a you know, something the DNA of Republicans typically. So, you know, if it means, the excuse has always been, you got to do COVID. We can't meet because of COVID. Shouldn't does that impact the calculus when you talk about members? Are you comfortable with saying, you know, despite what's going on the executive side of this, are you comfortable saying, well, I think everybody in that body is of some age that they ought to be out ahead, be qualified for the vaccine? But what about the lower chamber? What about the House, where you do have a younger membership?
Well, they do have some number of members or younger members, and you know, again, the history and of the impact of this virus, not 100%, but is that it does not impact younger members as much as it does older folks with underlying conditions. And again, my hope is that this vaccine rollout goes a lot better than most people think. I'll tell you this: if people quit keep refusing to take it, then there might be a whole lot of it available, right? It's got to solve the problem that way. But look, the House is working on some measures to vote remotely, to vote, you know, in a socially distanced manner. And look, let's be honest: you and I both know, and anybody that's been around Montgomery knows that a lot of times, you know, those members aren't always in their chair anyway, and those machines get voted one way or the other, whether there's a member there anyway. I don't think that's any breaking news. So I think they ought to be able to function, to get quorum and to function. And look, if you've got a couple legislators that aren't there for health reasons, that's not necessarily, unusual either. And I think we can limp along and get the people's business done and shift.
Yeah, well, you're starting to hear more and more about executive overreach, and it continues to be, hey, there's COVID going on. We gotta do this for those reasons.
You're right. I mean, you know, the governor has taken, I think, more liberty than anybody expected. The interesting thing is that everything I've heard so far is, well, I'm okay with what she's done, the substance of it, but the manner in which she's done it is got some serious constitutional questions, some separation of power questions at the very least. And I think everybody would argue, probably even the administration, that it's a stretch. You've heard, oh, well, these are unprecedented times, and therefore we're just going to let this go. And look, I understand that argument. My concern, and I think some of my colleagues' concerns, come in, well, what happens when it's something that we do object to? What happens when we, you know, instead of lowering tax burden, we're raising a tax burden? You know, you got the executive doing that. What happens when, you know, we're overriding a sunset on, you know, an act of the legislature, like a sunset clause in an economic development bill? What happens when we're overriding a sunset on something that everybody thought needed to go away? What happens in those situations? And I think we're setting a dangerous precedent. I think the legislature's starting to see that. And I think that we will take some action to try to curtail that, from happening when we go back. But, you know, the governor's actions have certainly open the eyes of some of my colleagues, to see exactly where these type of overreaches could happen. And I think, frankly, bolstered the argument once we, start debating this stuff on the floor.
Joined by State Senator Chris Elliott here on the program. Right now, as we speak, it's like a Christmas miracle, Senator. The big Christmas tree up in front of the Capitol there, and right underneath it, underway right now, is a press conference, and they're doing this. They're showcasing the report on the study group on gambling. I assume you haven't had a chance to look at it, and probably most of us haven't. But I guess my question is this: heading into 2021 and beyond, it's the same discussion every cycle or every quadrennium that, oh, this is the time for the lottery, or this is the time to do something on gaming. Is there any reason to be optimistic today on December the 18th, 2020?
I think probably so. You know, I voted in favor of a lottery, a paper lottery. I continue to be in favor of that. But I think the reason to be optimistic is, frankly, leadership understanding the political realities that exist and really coming to that conclusion. The speaker made some comments at an ACCA conference where we were both speaking, and he basically said, look, I can't get lottery passed with just my side of the aisle. I'm going to have to get votes from the other side of the aisle and in the House to get it done. Not necessarily the case in the Senate, but he said that that was the case in the House. I don't think that math has changed. And that's really the holdup, right? The Senate has passed, you know, lottery bills in the past. The problem is there are lots of different interests from these other areas that want to address local gambling and making it green, that you know, want to look at some of those types of issues and are unwilling to lend their support to a statewide lottery without having those other issues addressed. And that's where things get sticky. But I think that if there is a compromise that can be worked out with those votes in the House, then the likelihood is that it will move along. If whatever those folks are looking for is too odious to, you know, my conservative brethren, you know, the anti-lottery folks, then maybe not. And that will be the curious thing. I will continue to advocate for a paper lottery. I think that's something that the residents or my constituents and the residents of Alabama are after. And I think we're missing a boat on it. And I hope we can get something through. I'm willing to compromise to a point, but we'll have to see just what the demands are in order to get it through the House.
I mean, anytime the Powerball is up, you go drive over to Nine Mile Road at that first Florida exit. It's a line out the doorway. Let me ask you this, though. There's a lot of things that the legislature has potentially to address. If the governor doesn't go ahead and address them for you. But, I mean, it's going to be potentially very, 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 very busy session. And if you don't get it done in 2021, two things. I am skeptical the governor will ever call a special session of the legislature again. She's been saying that she was since 2019, and it never ever happened except for that very beginning of 2019 during the session. So that's number one. But number two, 2022, that last year, the quadrennium, is that out year when not a lot of big things get done. How optimistic are you about getting any of these boxes checked next year?
Well, I think you bring up a good point, and as usual, pretty insightful about how things work politically, and it is a political body. I think we're going to have to prioritize. I mean, I really do. There are going to be some big issues and some big bills that we need to move. You know, you've been around the legislature enough to know that there are certain pet projects from different legislators that sometimes, you know, just do not matriculate. They may be important to that particular legislature or that particular town or county or whatever, but they just statewide do not have the support to move forward. I think you'll see a lot of that. It will just not move. It will not have the opportunity to move just because it's not important to the body as a whole or the state as a whole. And that's just a factor of time. But I expect we'll spend a lot more time on some of the bigger issues, try to get those out of the way, and then see if there is time available to deal with some of those that may be secondary or tertiary and not really on the cusp of what everybody's wanting to get accomplished this session.
I mean, you think about it. Gaming obviously is out there. Aside from all the COVID stuff and rolling back of executive authority, there's that. You know, there's apportionment, which that is going to require. When I talked to your colleague, Jim McClendon and Chris Pringle in the House, they insist that the census isn't going to be ready in time, for you guys to do apportionment, next year. You're going to have to do it in a special session, but there's that. There's obviously the budgets, which are very, a big part of it. And, you know, all of these other things, like, you know, we talk about medical marijuana or doing something, as we talked to Gerald Allen yesterday about with the Memorial Preservation Act, all of those things, it doesn't look like there's going to be a whole lot of time for those big quasi-controversial items to be addressed.
Well, you're probably right. And again, I think when you talked about medical marijuana, for instance, again, the Senate's taken action on that previously. It's not moved in the House. At some point, you gotta say, you know, look, let's if the House wants to take this up, if there's any movement down there before we start spending a lot of time on it in the Senate again. And I think you'll see that again. We've also got, and those are the types of decisions that are going to have to be made by leadership about what to put on the calendar. I don't want to keep replowing the same ground in the House, just not be interested in taking it up. So you have to have some good communication between leadership of both chambers to see what are y'all going to actually, pick up and run with when we send it down there. I just don't think there's a lot of point in spending a bunch of time upstairs on it if it's not going to be taken up downstairs.
I mean, that's kind of an interesting thing, and we're running out of time here, but the House, the Senate's usually the deliberative body. In my recollection, things always went to go die in the House, but under Marsh these last few years, the House was getting stuff passed and done, and it would just kind of go down to the lower chamber, and, it got put on the stack and died on the vine.
It is, it's been the source of significant consternation. I hope that can get worked out for my House colleagues' sake, because the last thing you want to do is go into an election season when you've got one chamber saying, look, we've tried to take that up time after time, whether it's prison or medical marijuana or what it may be. We've tried to take these matters up, and yet we've not gotten any action in the other body. That's not something you want to have happen in election season.
Senator, we've got to leave it there, but as always, we appreciate your time, and we will, I don't know if we'll do it again next week or how that's going to work, but we'll talk real soon.
Just let me know, sir.
All right. Senator Chris Elliott, ladies and gentlemen, making his usual Friday appearance.